Thank you. It's important to realize that what we've known in adult when it comes to asthma differs from what we know when it comes to children. And regardless of how we keep on looking at data, we are constantly running into disparities, variances that needs to be explained. So today, we would like to look at a couple of the risk factors that tend to drive not asthma itself, but the persistent asthma in terms of severity. We declare no conflicts of interest. I mean, if we look at the normal lungs and the asthmatic lungs, clearly we observe with asthmatic lungs the tightening of the muscles, the lining and the swelling of the mucosa excessively, indicating simply occlusion of the blood vessels as well as the bronchial tree. This is quite remarkable as the physiologic changes here. The question then becomes, what are we doing here today in terms of looking at risk factors that tend to be social, psychosocial, or economic in nature? How do we translate all this to the physiologic changes? A clear look at the risk things that tend to predispose to this condition here. The founding fathers of medicine have declared in the past, typically Hippocrates, that the pathway to curing a disease depends on our understanding of the underlying cause. Asthma had been around for years. We do not understand the underlying cause of this illness. Medicine can prevent, can control, but cannot cure. So based on what we've known today, the risk factors tend to be environmental. It also tends to be genetic. In the process of looking at these factors here, the social and psychological platforms translate to what we see that affects the physiology and consequently results in persistent bronchial spasms. So for this presentation here, we'll just very briefly look at the global prevalence of childhood asthma around the world, the U.S. experience with respect to childhood and adult, then look into childhood asthma severity that I've been really focused on, as well as the predisposition factors. Then we'll take a very brief look of our own current findings based on the national data. And on the basis of this here, is it possible to look at risk-adapted prevention and control? And then what are the challenges of public health? If we cannot cure, we should be able to control and prevent. Therefore, policies to control asthma would lead to the removal of these disparities, given the fact that medicine is unable to cure but could treat. A global experience kept on indicating that as environmental changes comes in, asthma across the world is increasing in prevalence. Typically, as you look at the highlighted portions there, would indicate the gradual increase in symptomatic presentation of asthma across the world. Similarly, we look at some kind of stability in places like Spain, United Kingdom. It's been claimed the English-speaking countries tend to notice some kind of reduction. But notwithstanding, when you look at the U.S., you can go back to 1964, you still keep on seeing increasing patterns. The question becomes, are these run by environmental factors? Are they psychological factors? Are they social factors? These are the questions that remain to be answered. And that's why we're interested in looking at what is it that tends to create this variability when comparing populations. And again, the rationale points to increasing factors here, comparing all these European countries, and now indicating what prevalences we're seeing as the condition keeps on increasing. For the European findings, it's been fairly attributed to environmental changes. And data kept on indicating that asthma in terms of severity is increasing in developing countries. When you're looking at severity, it tends to be more in the low and middle economic countries. The asthma and allergy childhood study clearly confirmed these findings here, that over the years, we're constantly looking at increase. So the Europeans really decided to study 98 countries. On the basis of these 98 countries here, came down with a single conclusion that the prevalence of asthma is increasing. Then where do we stand at this point here, given the US data? 25.7 million people in the nation are affected by the condition. And children less than 18 are 7.0 million affected. So we are looking at the economic burden of this condition here, as well as the burden on families and the society. So given this here, we've got to act and to act now. So clearly I'm going to run through all these graphics here. You see the variability between childhood and adult. It's becoming, in the US, we are looking at the prevalence that is constantly high among children. They're female as well. And then when you look at the race ethnicity, blacks tend to carry the burden of asthma in the US. And when you look at ethnicity, the Puerto Ricans carry the burden of this illness here. We are unable at this point here to determine whether or not this is driven by genetic variability or a shared environment or psychosocial variability. Now, in terms of the burden, this slide here looks at the days kids miss school. As you see, you look at increasing patterns from 2003 to 2013. Children are missing school because of asthma. And then you look at in terms of the prevalence here in the US, we're constantly finding increase in the prevalence of asthma in general. And the prevalence by race, the black line there indicates black or African Americans, and with the highest prevalence. The lines are not crossing at all. And through this process here, you can start from 2001 to 2010, where the CDC has got the most recent data, the prevalence is increasing. Now again, the similar presentation by the CDC indicates male-female variability, variability by race, variability by ethnicity. You see the yellow spike lines there that points to the Puerto Ricans carrying the burden of the disease. And when you look at race, you see blacks are carrying the burden of the disease. And when you look at age, children carry the burden of the disease. And again, this brought it back in terms of the age at diagnosis when kids first come to the attention of the medical care. And children very young are carrying the burden of the disease at this point here. And when you look at 5 to 14, and with children, we're constantly seeing this by age group. Well, in terms of asthma severity, that's the U.S. map from the CDC indicating the density of asthma severity. Could pick that up. So now, for the burden, we've talked about this. So for us to try to understand this burden and the implication of this to the prevention itself, we decided to use the 2012 National Child Health Survey that actually collects information from families, adult members in the families, in terms of what tends to be the disease conditions, including social factors, in order to understand the clustering of disease. So I'd like at this point here to point out that race and ethnicity, as well as SES, remain two related concepts. They're not interchangeable in the first place. And as we look at data, the combined effect of race, ethnicity, and social factors tend to give us different results. As a consequence, crude analysis is no longer a solution to the problem in public health. The combination of these factors that creates this complexity. My question then becomes, where are the spiders in the web of the causation? If there are so many things driving this presentation here, where are the spiders? Where should we start addressing in order to eliminate disparities? One of the variables we guys like to look at is violence. A study was done by Tabeliev in Brazil, and it just came with a correlation, a direct correlation between violence as a psychological trauma and the predisposition to asthma itself. And those of you guys who have opportunity to look at the correlation analysis, if you draw a line, you expect to see a line that either goes up or goes down that points to direct correlation or negative correlation. In this context here, there's a direct correlation which is possible between being exposed to violence and then presenting with asthma with respect to hospitalization. And again, the global childhood asthma studies constantly indicate severity among lower and middle income countries. In translating these findings to the US, we are saying that racial and underserved minorities are the ones that carry this burden. Indicators such as deprivation are positively correlated with childhood asthma prevalence as well as hospitalization. So, for our design, we use retrospective assessment of a cross-sectional data. The nation collects this data every year, but because we are not collecting from the same sample, we cannot call this a longitudinal data or prospective. It becomes cross-sectional. The process of assessing this data here indicates its retrospective nature. So we look at our outcome variable being asthma severity has been rarely studied in the nation. And our predictors were violence, social disadvantages, parental education, social hardship. And then, knowing very well that nothing explains everything, we decided to look for confounders. I'm sure the epidemiologists in this room here who understand the role of confounding variables. Nothing explains everything. Nothing makes sense at a crude level unless you try to explain it with other variables in a shared environment. For those of you who've been exposed with graduate school level epidemiology, the confounding becomes very important to assess and to control for before releasing the results. Then, what method did we use? We got to bear in mind that these are secondary data analyses. The sampling frame had been achieved, so we only basing the entire analysis on the strength of the data collection itself. So, to understand really, we've got to apply the chi-square, the Mantel-Hansel. These are simple stratification models to see, find out what is going into data. You don't jump into regression model because those hide things away from you. First, classify your data, find out what is going on with respect to severe asthma and those the subpopulation we're dealing with. Then, in order to explain whether or not what we are seeing is driven by chance or some kind of error, we need to build a multivariate model. Bearing in mind that in doing this here, our intent is to explain why the variability exists. And in the process of doing here, you can't place your type 1 error tolerance at 95%. It's got to be, what, 99% in order to minimize this error. And that was really, that's the population in National Survey of Children's Survey. The end, it looks like a large sample, 95,000 children. And your intent being to evaluate asthma severity brings the sample to 7,000 plus. So of all this year, we ended up with the severity being 2,000 and mild. And because of this reduction here, you've got to be very careful with respect to what constitutes your modeling. Results. Clearly, public health evidence must be based on effect size. I'm sure you guys have been taught about the p-value all time. Statistically significant, statistically non-significant. These things are nonsense. Evidence must be based on effect size evaluation. P-value, whatever it is, reflects the size of a study, but not the measure of evidence. So here are results here. With respect to the prevalence of asthma severity in the U.S., there are very few findings in this case here. So we've actually confirmed that 25.9%, close to 30% of asthma diagnosed in children tend to be severe. That's a first finding. Our next finding looks at the distribution of asthma severity by race. Here we're seeing that the severity was most in black children relative to whites, and we account for these. No explanation yet. We also looked at, repetition of the same slide. Here, I move to ethnicity slide. With respect to ethnicity here, we realize that when you're looking black non-Hispanic is 33.4, Hispanic 30%, and white non-Hispanic 22.5%, and multiracial, which is very difficult to explain. This table basically indicates the variables that needs to be understood before building the model as to see to explain for the variability in asthma severity. If you look at race, African Americans were 67% more likely to be diagnosed with the condition relative to whites. And you look at environment, poor environment associated with 30% increased odds of developing severe asthma. And then you look at poverty level. There's what is called dose response when you perform epidemiologic study. The poorer you were, the more likely it is that your child presented with asthma severity. Smoking played a role as well, social hardship. So looking at all these factors here, there is a reason to regard them as confounding and to address them in your model. So here we perform what is called to see what is going on using the so-called the odd ratio tabulation, and this indicated variability here, 67% and 17% in terms of ethnicity. So this is the model that we built. So in the first model here, we simply run what is called the crude model, which doesn't explain a lot of things. It simply indicates to you that the variance there. Then we built the second model, model two. We adjusted for violence, because we observed that violence predisposed to asthma severity. Children that grow up in a poor environment with gunshots are more likely to present with asthma severity. If time allows me, I would take you guys through the process whereby a trauma, a gunshot, sets up increased vasoconstriction. When the blood vessel constricts, we have less perfusion, and that being the case, kids could easily go into asthmatic attacks. So this is variable, it transcends the social variability into the physiologic system itself. Then in model three, we adjusted for balance and social hardship. As you look at this model here, the burden is decreasing. In model four, we adjusted for balance, social hardship, and social disadvantage. With this adjustment, the probability, the odds of being diagnosed with severe asthma comparing blacks to white now fell from 67% to 31%. Now, we then move into the next model. We adjusted for sex, age, passive smoking, childhood depression, rundown neighborhood, health insurance, and poverty. And eventually, the burden dropped toward 24%. And if you understand the interpretation of the confidence interval, you realize that this finding here is still relevant, implying that despite this adjustment, we were unable to remove the racial disparities, indicative of several mechanisms, factors that come in to predispose black children to severe asthma diagnosis. In conclusion, here we want to be very clear that violence, social disadvantage, social hardship predisposed to asthma severity, and racial heterogeneity exist in this relationship, which was not removed after all these adjustments. Our inference basically is indicative of complex economic, psychological, social, and environmental determinants of asthma severity among children. These factors act individually and probably jointly to predispose to this condition. The key message here is simple. Severe asthma disproportionately affects racial minorities, mainly blacks. Several mechanisms act separately and jointly to create racial disparities. Social, psychological, economic, and environmental factors play a substantial role. Assessment of these factors, including exposure to violence, social hardship, social disadvantages, environment, and other biological mechanisms, is required for risk-adapted intervention mapping. Further, child harassment follows social patterns. Data from all countries indicate these patterns here. Disadvantaged social status predicts higher levels of morbidity and mortality for childhood asthma. And the condition of social adversity tend to cluster in the same people, in the same place. You can look at zip code, you can look at subgroup populations. The social distribution of childhood asthma must be understood and addressed in the context of occurrence. Multiple adverse conditions, as we showed from our data, we are unable to remove it. Efficient intervention mapping for the prevention and treatment of this condition need to address these non-medical determinants. These determinants are non-medical, and public health is challenged to address them. In final, evidence-based public health policy deserves a place in making the environment free of respiratory insults. Black people tend to live in environments that are polluted and consequently predisposed to respiratory compromisation. Pollutants, allergens, especially given the immature immune system of children. Children don't get active immune system until certain age in the first place. A child that is born into this world here today requires 6 months to develop IgG, which is antibodies against pathogens and allergens. This process of not creating a safe and a free environment predisposed to asthma manifestation among black kids. This job could not be done by single individuals. They have been motivated by lots of graduate students. Isabel Morgan coordinated this study here. Erica Bradley did the processing of part of the analysis, as well as tabulation of the study. Keg Dabney reviewed the background of the study that came to this point here. And Patricia Oshenik provided lots of input as to which direction the study should go with respect to coordination. Adrian Wallace, who is the health research associate researcher, did a lot in terms of monitoring the process of the study. LaVisha McLean provided input with respect to how the study should move forward, looking at confounding and other variables here. So at this point here, I'd like to thank you guys for giving me the chance to present these findings here for public health action. Thank
you. I'm going to take a couple of questions now, if any for the speaker. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, there was a question.
Okay, because I'm going to leave, do you mind if you take one question from me? Okay. With respect to survival data, SIA collects data from 1973 to 2011, the data that you use. See, the survival data is time to an event. Some people joined the SIA, just got diagnosed in 1973. They provide lots of time. Those who were diagnosed in 2009 only provided probably 1 year. So without adjusting for the year of diagnosis, survival data in SIA is useless.
No, actually, SIA first, they make a lot of research and have very strict methods when they put data to the public. And this is so that we have more time to do.
You understand
so
that?
Even if you do any kind of
Sure, I understand that the end point for survival is mortality. In sheer data, is that. So your survival relates to what? The 5-year relative survival?
I mean, yeah, it's a relative survival. They have to observe the expected survival.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to offer some kind of suggestions at this point here. Because a survival data is timed to an event. You must follow a close cohort.
Yeah.
Cohort is close. You start from day one and follow them for a period of time. And then you identify occurrence. And then you can analyze. That's why you analyze the median survival and not the mean survival.
In terms of the type of study that you're doing, this is not a cohort study. This is like really incident data. They are having data for the cancer risk. It's not like a study where you have the exposed group, and then you have like the timeline.
Yeah, sure, I understand that. I've been using SEER data since 2001. I've been analyzing. You go on the web, I've published intensively with the data. Prostate cancer and the rest. So one of the things that we caution when survival is being done is to respect the fact that the survival time by African Americans and by whites vary a great deal of variability. So you cannot compare your survival unless you look at when were they being diagnosed, and then you keep on following, adjusting for that allows you to provide a clear, reasonable findings for public health. Thank you.